Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan M. Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, it's Megan M. Biro here, podcasting live from Arlington, Massachusetts, actually. I'm in one of my work bar offices today. It's kind of cool. What's up? I don't know about anybody else out there. If you're in New England or the Northeast, I'm completely done with winter, and we got issues because it just started. So anyone want to float me some airline tickets to somewhere warm, I'm your gal. Okay, I'm looking at you. Let's hashtag using work trends today. Come on in, join the conversation. I want to thank everybody for being here and all of you people who inspire me to keep this going, to be honest with you. You know, it's a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of work, right? Speaking of work, I'm an entrepreneur. I got a special affinity for others out there who wake up every morning and say, how are we going to make this work? And I know a lot of you out there in the audience and community, you're in the same boat that I'm in and that we're all in, especially in the HR tech space. Have you ever actually wondered about executing an idea that you have for a product or a service but felt unsure about it being right? I know I have. I probably a couple of times a week, which is scary to admit, always coming up with new ideas, right? But, like, how do you know it's the right product to satisfy the buying audience, right? Because if we're not selling anything, ideas are just that. It's like air. So how do you eventually determine how to scrap an idea, how to keep it? I'm hoping that today's guest is here to shed some light for us, and I know he will, on how you can resurrect that idea and give it another try if you need to. So with me today is Boris G. I'm definitely not going to go down the road of pronouncing his last name. We'll let him do that. He's the co-founder of the company Seedbelt. And Boris, I'm going to have him say hello in a minute, but he's, just to give you an idea of who he is, he's been working in advertising since he was, get this everybody, 11 years old. He started as a new business agent in 1994, and from there went a long way from designer to creative director, working in different advertising agencies. He's a former curator and lecturer of the creative education section of IKRA. He's a former lecturer at Higher School of Economics in, well, get this, non-media communications. I'm going to have to unpack that a little bit. Not quite sure. And in 2015, he founded Moose Tank. They're a studio that helps people and brands build digital products quickly and efficiently. Welcome, Boris.
Hey. Hi, everyone. Thanks for introduction. Yeah, my last name is a little bit hard to pronounce. It's Goncharov. It's just Slavic last name. So, yeah, I completely understand
cool.
that. Yeah.
And where do you hail from originally?
Yeah, I'm originally from Russia. So now I live in Los Angeles, California, and one of the best places where you can start new businesses and new ideas.
You think so? Why so?
I think so, yeah. I think that the environment and the people is like a little bit more welcoming right now in Southern California, and it's a little bit easier to pick up the business, even if you just at the starting point, you will spend way less money to test and try out your business hypothesis. So I think that Silicon Valley is a little bit like harder and faster environment. So you would probably have to spend way more money and effort to launch something on yourself, on your own.
Yeah, you're right. So. And not to mention cost of living. I'm certain that it's way better to be in LA than San Francisco in terms of rents or buying property. What's your experience with that?
Exactly. So if you want to rent some office space for your, I don't know, like first business that is related to some, I don't know, warehouses or whatever else, or you want to find some people to hire and help you to run your first stages. So yeah, it's definitely way cheaper, like at least twice cheaper than San Francisco Bay Area. So if you're going to be like selling some new products and managing some warehouses and any other types of businesses that require labor.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and you know what? It actually really matters. It matters to me as somebody who's been in the talent space for what seems like forever now. But it just matters in general when you scale your business. You've got to find the right talent, the right culture fits. I still believe in that, right? So talk to us. I know our community here is eager to hear more about you and your career adventure and, like, what led you here. So let me ask you this, just for a little backdrop on you. When did you actually move to the U.S.?
I moved to U.S. 3.5 years ago, and I was really excited to switch a little bit, make a switch in my career. So I've been working in advertising for a long time, and I was always eager to build some products for clients that bring value for them, not only for advertising goals, but bringing some value to their customers. So that's how I just decided to switch my career and go into the product, building a product industry, building digital products. So I co-founded a company called Moostank. This company has been serving clients since 2015. We've been helping people and companies build their own first version of their digital products and applications. So, for example, some company have a business idea. They want to sell some sort of software, and they need their first version of the software. They don't want to hire a team, a full-time developers team, and they just want to build quick version of the product and try to sell it to the audience. That's what we've been doing since 2015 at Moostank. So we've helped a lot of companies build their own versions of the businesses. And since that moment, we've discovered a lot of knowledge and a lot of techniques, how you can save on MVPs and the minimum viable products that you could use for your, like, to try your business idea. So
Yeah. Hey, a couple of questions. I'm a little stuck on this. Forgive. It's how I roll. What is non-media communications? How is that even possible? Please explain that to us.
It's just at that particular university, that was a section that was dedicated to the communications that not going through the paid media. So you don't use paid media display ads. You use communications or any other type of communications that don't use like classical.
You still there, my friend? Hope we're not losing you
there
already. Okay, we got a little delay in LA. Okay, well, you're talking about organic, aren't you? Right, organic growth, not non-paid media. I know all about that, by the way. That's how I got started in media, and it's still a lot of what I do is still organic, believe it or not. Right? That's so cool.
Awesome. Yeah. That
hey,
means,
listen.
People
really. I got another burning question for you. Moostank, what's the deal with the name? Share with us.
Oh, yeah.
We must know.
Yeah, it's a funny name. So we've been thinking about some animal that would be like a representative for our company. We've been thinking for someone dependable and smart and at the same time, like, you know, like durable, who can just stand So moose is like one of the most dependable animals in the forest. So yeah, he can stand a lot of crisis and stress and still deliver the product. So that's why we choose Moostank. And Tank is like a tank full of smart mooses. That's basically
that's
the idea behind the name. And sounds funny.
And you do realize that the moose is a very elusive animal. Like I've been up in Maine for most of my life in the summer and kind of traveling and different, and I've been in Minnesota. I've never seen a moose. Like, there's moose crossing. Like, you're going to see a moose, maybe. Nobody sees moose.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Keep us guessing, right? You're a little elusive that way. So listen, let's dive in. Let's talk to those right out there who have this idea. Maybe they woke up this morning. They've had too much. Well, in my case, I haven't had caffeine. I've had Earl Grey tea. It's still got caffeine in it, by the way. When we're ideating, what is the perfect timing for testing a single business hypothesis? And how do you prepare for that?
I think that the preparation for this process is just you got an idea and you think that there's value for the customers. So if there's value and you think that there's value, this is your hypothesis and you're ready to test it right away. So basically the perfect timing is right now. If you have free time tomorrow, just start doing that. Just sit and draw the line where you decide if this idea would be if this idea worth to invest your time and effort. So basically, if it's just a product you want to sell or if it's a service you want to offer to the people, you have to offer it as quickly as possible. And actually, for the most services and businesses and products, it's enough for spending 1 to 3 weeks and you ready to publish your first business, your first version of your business. So I think within 1 to 3 weeks, you can deliver and launch almost anything.
Wow, that's pretty quick. But, I mean, that's how we're moving right now, right? I mean, you can't let an idea sit around too long if it's actually viable. That's what you're saying, right?
Right, because, it's just ideas. It's just something that comes to many people at the same time. So if you not try this idea right away, maybe someone will be quicker than you tomorrow. So it's just, you don't have to waste a lot of time.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
What can you sacrifice for the sake of a quicker launch? And is it wise to do this versus it being very planned out and strategic?
I understand that some companies that build revolutionary products, true revolutionary products like space discovery or some electric vehicles or some new forms of energy or any other companies that would spend a lot of time on strategic development and planning. Aside from that, most of the business hypothesis can be tried in a very basic form. So I think that you could sacrifice almost everything except the core feature or the core service that you're planning to provide to your customers. And sometimes, if you want to build an application, even this core feature, you can just represent this feature by your manual work or concierge work. In the future, you will have an application that would be doing the services automatically. But at the time of testing, at the time of launching your first version, you basically can even sacrifice this core feature and just do the manual work to represent this feature for the people. The only thing you need is a response from your audience. So they're ready to pay for that, for the service.
Mm-hmm. How do you define audience in this case?
That's a good question because sometimes you build a product for one audience and then you realize that your product is just being adopted by completely different people.
Exactly.
So, it's the part of hypothesis. It's part of guessing. So today you think that you're focusing on one audience, and tomorrow you realize that this audience is not picking up what you're offering. So you have to. It's a part of guessing as well. I think it's just.
Did you just say guessing? Did I just hear guessing? That's what you're suggesting to us to do. I love it. Well, you know, sometimes you got to guess, right?
Yeah, because
you're just being real. Right.
Yeah, because at first you design a product in your mind and you design the audience for that probably could use your product, but like in the next stage, as we know, you discover that this product is completely it brings value to a completely different bunch of people. So you never know. You can just make your guess based on your experience, on your market research, on your I don't know, whatever else facts you can obtain. But it's still unproven, so you have to prove it. So before you prove it, it's still guessing. Yeah, it's based on the fact, it's based on the information, it's based on the analysis. But you have to prove it.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And not everybody has the same approach, which is kind of refreshing, frankly. You don't need to have the same, right? I mean, everyone has a different way of approaching. It's really problem solving when it comes down to it, right? We're trying to solve somebody's problem, essentially, when we're creating a product, or we hope so, at least.
Yeah.
Let's go back, Boris G. I want to talk a little bit about bare minimum, because it just seems like we're in these times where everybody is sort of like wants that bare minimum thing. Like, how do we define bare minimum when it comes to a product being sold to the buying public?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because we've been discussing this a little bit previously. And so the most important thing that your customers can give to you is their answers in form of purchase, right? So if they can purchase your product, that's the bare minimum. So payment processing solution incorporated in email, that's something you could sell your product with, or it could be a landing page that explains the offering, or it could be a YouTube video that leads to some sort of like payment gateway page when people can purchase the first package of your service. I mean, definitely I've heard a lot of stories that people picking up a lot of money with just an email sequence. So I think this is the barest minimum I've heard about. But definitely, there's no need to develop complex platform with a lot of pages, a lot of services. You can just build something really quickly, like one single pager or email sequence or like video campaign. And if you can sell the service and you try to deliver to the first 5 to 10 customers, that may be enough for you to make your to adjust after this first bunch of customers. So if you can serve 5 to 10 people with your product, that would be the bare minimum. Maybe in the next stage you want to do some adjustments and try to bring like 100 or 1,000 more customers. But like first 5 to 10 people who will pay you, that's the most important thing, I guess.
Well, you know what, Boris? I'm going to poll my audience, because I've got about 3 new ideas. And if I've got 10 of you out there who are willing to give me your email address for my idea, you're going to win a special prize out there with the Work Trends community. So let's try it. I might try that later and see what happens. Yes, I have a big grin on my face. And yes, I'm joking. Well, kind of, sort of. You never know, right? So listen, speaking of ideas, and I know, you know, I've suffered from this. Many of my friends have too. How do you know when it's time to just abandon a hypothesis and move to the next idea? Like, what is that moment that we should know where it's like, just give it up. Go try something else. It's just not working. It's not coming together. Yada, yada.
Right. Yeah. It's a really hard moment when you just, the more you invest in your idea, the harder it's to throw it out. So it's just, I think this should be a part of your plan, initial plan. So for example, you want to try to sell some sort of service and you're planning to spend a week for your website, for the landing page, incorporating the payment solution, and then you're planning to spend not more than $1,000 on your ad campaign. So it's better to stick to your plan because it's just unlimited space, and it's just unlimited. You can bring unlimited effort to any of the idea in the world, but your goal is to build a successful business. So the first and the most important thing is just to stick to the initial plan you had in your mind. And second is to be honest with yourself, because if you spend more on bringing customer than you making on them, so it's, and you cannot increase the price, you cannot fix that. So why do you spend more effort and more time on this idea? Because you can have like 10 more right away.
Right.
So,
I was just going to say, there's always going to be a backup plan to all of you out there who are dreaming on a new venture. Remember that. You know, just because one idea has not worked does not give you carte blanche to be hard on yourself or to limit your opportunities for growth. I really strongly believe that. I think people should be allowed to dream big and execute accordingly, but I think it's also really important to be honest with yourself. And, you know, numbers don't lie. If there is not a revenue stream or an audience that's buying this or asking for it after they know it's out there, we have a disconnect probably. And as you said, we're all operating more so, especially entrepreneurs like us, in that bare minimum mode right now. It's lean and mean, I think, for a lot of people. And it's really important when it is lean and mean to know when to move on, you know, and do it quickly, you know. Hey, the same thing goes for hiring people, you know. I'll know if somebody's a good fit within a number of weeks, right? I've been hiring a long time, and it's all about fit. But it's the same kind of philosophy, lean and mean. Like, if it's not working, look it in the eyes, talk about it, communicate, of course, and then decide quickly, you know. Tell us this, Boris. What kind of information should people be armed with to bring their product to the market and niche before testing a business idea?
Yeah, so it's definitely worth to dive into the niche and see what people are doing on the, in the area. Do a little research, what people do, like what other companies do, what product they sell, what price they charge. And it's definitely worth to check the how do they advertise their services as well. So that always helped me. Just to jump into Google and search for the keywords and see how they offer their businesses, because most of the companies already spend, I'm not sure how many, but like thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars on advertising. So they definitely optimized their own offering. So it's definitely worth to check what do they sell and how do they sell. And other valuable piece of information may come from the Google Trends or organic like search requests or search inquiries that people enter into Google or any other search engine. So you can just go and check how many people search for the solution of this problem. If there's enough people searching for the solution, that may be a market for you. If there's not too many people searching for the solution, that might be a problem with like bringing the audience, or you have to educate your audience before you will be able to sell to them. So it's definitely worth to obtain this kind of information as well. Also, it's better to know what type of services or what type of resources you're going to be using before you build an idea. So just sit and plan. Okay, so for payment gateways, we need this solution. For the landing page, we need that solution. For the mail campaigns, we need that solution. So it's definitely worth to have a basic understanding of the services and other solutions like Intercom or MailChimp. So you're going to be used in almost any of your business ideas and hypotheses.
Yeah.
So. Main idea is not to overwhelm yourself with analysis, because you can just have information anxiety. So you get like too much information, and you just stuck with this, and you don't move on. You don't go forward. you actually can block yourself from testing or trying your business hypothesis because you get too much of information. And yeah, I think it's just important not to spend too much time on that.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. And it's easy to fall into that trap. It's also important, I think, to have a good support system of friends or colleagues that you can just bounce ideas off of or just get that support you need. Like, don't go the isolation route. It's not good. And, you know I've kind of fallen into that trap over the years. And, you know, I don't know about you, Boris, but it's easy to do, right? It's easy to kind of get into your own head or your own circle and just get out, break that cycle if anybody out there is in it right now, you know, because it's easy. You get wrapped up. And I think,
yeah,
you know,
totally
just being around, being around other people who are in the same shoes or just can lend you their time is super cool. I know I'm starting to do that more and more, you know, and it just helps. Tell us, what's super cool out there in LA? Like, what's popping in terms of business models, apps? Talk to us.
I don't know. I think that's there's a construction boom in Los Angeles right now, and I think that's the city's changing a lot. And this moves a lot of businesses around. So a lot of new companies that deliver services, a lot of new companies that just move, like bring new working spaces, new office spaces, new co-living solutions, and a lot of things that connected with like mixture of apartments and office spaces. So I think this is kind of like you can see that when you come to the city, you can see that because it's just, I've read recently that this is the construction boom that we didn't have since 1920s. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think that's
super cool.
You can feel those changes, right?
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure you're more sensitive to it than maybe other people are, just because that's like the space you're playing in all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you have that gut feeling like, oh, this is going to be huge, or, oh, this is going to be a flop? Like, I know I had that experience, and I'm going to be random here, which I love to be, by the way, with everybody. I mean, Blue Apron, is anyone else going, what is the future of a company like Blue Apron where you can order your foods, you know, delivered fresh to your home, and then they're going to give you the recipe to do it? There's a part of me that just doesn't think that's going to succeed long term. Maybe it's me. It's just in my gut. Like, I don't find it to be an interesting business model. Anything out there that you feel like it's just not going to work or it's not that interesting on the other side of that?
I think that the companies you've mentioned, like Blue Apron or any other companies that offer something and you don't feel exactly it's your thing and you're ready to subscribe for that, it doesn't mean that this service wouldn't survive in this form. I mean, in the future, they may be they maybe bring some feature, or maybe some other company will do exactly the same thing, but with the other angle or with the other secret sauce, or bring it to the other type of audience. And maybe, for example, they will do business to business for schools or any other sort of
service
that would help. Yeah. So definitely sometimes you feel that idea is not exactly there, but a small adjustment or like pivot can just create a new market.
Yeah, that's super cool. I love that you brought that up because there's always a B-side, right? Listen, thank you, Boris. We're down to another 60 seconds, and then we're going to take this conversation over to Twitter, utilizing Work Trends as our hashtag. I'd love to hear from people out there on this topic, and certainly join us now as we move on over there to continue the conversation. Continued success to you, Boris G., and I look forward to, if I'm in L.A., maybe we can just hang out and have some coffee and see what is indeed bubbling up over there, because these are really interesting times to be in business.
Right. Thank you so much. Thank you for this time and this wonderful conversation. I would be happy to meet you and have some coffee or whatever else in Los Angeles. And thank you for your time and this really important questions that you brought. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.